We come back this morning to the book of 1 Samuel. We're looking into the life and character and influence of this man, this prophet of the Lord, from his earliest days until the end of his long life. And last week we read of the devastating impact of the story in 1 Samuel of the defeat of the Israelites by the Philistines and why it happened and what brought about this devastating loss and defeat. The Israelites were at war against the Philistines, and they were soundly defeated by them. And it was a shocking defeat for God's people. They believed that there's no way that God would let them be destroyed. And they also believed that God would protect them and protect the Ark of the Covenant. They believed that God had so much pride that when it came to the Ark of the Covenant, God would not let it fall into the hands of the Gentiles, especially the Philistines, and that Ark represented to them the safety and security of God. And they were in shock that they were defeated so badly. And last week we talked about why. They believed that God would never let the Ark be captured, but God would protect them because the Ark was sacred. And God gave it to them. And if God gave them such a sacred thing, then God would protect it no matter what. But the Israelites for far too long had been taking God for granted. They had been disobeying Him. They had been worshiping other gods. They had even, some of them worshiped the gods of the Philistines. They had stopped honoring the Sabbath. They had stopped doing what they knew in their hearts they were supposed to do. The Israelites knew what they were supposed to do, but they intentionally walked away from what God had showed them they were supposed to do, and God sent messengers to warn them and warn them and warn them. He said, if you don't stop what you're doing, I'm gonna punish you. And they didn't listen. And last week we read about how God withdrew His presence from the Israelite people and from the Israelite leadership and from the Israelite army. All God needed to do was withdraw His presence. And the consequences of ignoring God poured out upon the Israelite people. If you ignore God long enough, the consequences of God saying, it's your choice and your decision, will bring devastation to your life. And that's what happened to the Israelite people. Sometimes we forget who God is. We forget about authority. We forget to say, God, You need to be the highest authority in my life. Sometimes, I talked about last week, we kind of reduced God from this down to this, and we think, God, well, now I have You in my little box, and now I can put You away somewhere, and if I want You later, I'll call for You, but otherwise, don't try to get involved in my life. Don't try to tell me what to do. Don't prick my conscience about things when I know I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. I know my attitude's not right. You know, you can tell God, yes, I'm going to put You in that box and I'm going to put You away. And that's what the Israelite people had done. We can relegate God to the back, the far part of our lives, the corner of our house. I talked about last week, the back of the shed. So the question today as we continue in this story, what place of authority does God have in your life? What place of authority does God have in your life? As I've been reading in Samuel, and you know I love to preach series from the book of the Bible, and sometimes I get onto a story and I don't want to let it go. And this story has another end to it, another half of it at least. And so this morning I want to continue in this story. And while we continue and look at this story, I want to keep that question out in front of you. It's like there's a wrestling match that can go on in your heart and your mind. Is God going to be in charge or not? And there's this struggle on the inside, and there's that spirit, and the New Testament talks about that struggle about who's going to be in charge. Until you settle that question, then you're on that edge of saying, God, I'm putting You in a box and I'm putting You behind me. Don't mess with me. I want to make my own choices and my own decisions. That's what the Israelites chose to do. And so God, they made God real small. They said, God, we're not going to listen to You. God, we're not going to do what you tell us that we should do for our own protection and for our own good. And God, we know better than You. And so the Israelites faced consequences that were very painful. And so we move on to chapter 5 today in the story, the Ark in Ashdod and Ekron. And so today I want us to look at, well, what happened to the Ark of the Covenant after it was captured? And what happened to the Israelite people after this devastating loss? What happened to them? What did they do? What happened to the ark? Chapter 5, 1 Samuel, would you stand with me? I'm going to read verses 1 through 8. And then we're going to look at this story and then what happens to the Israelites in the next chapter. 1 Samuel chapter 5, verse 1 says, "After the Philistines had captured the ark of God, they took it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. Then they carried the ark into Dagon's temple and set it beside Dagon. When the people of Ashdod rose early the next day, there was Dagon fallen on his face on the ground before the ark of the Lord. They took Dagon and put him back in his place. But the following morning when they rose, there was Dagon fallen on his face on the ground before the ark of the Lord. His head and hands had been broken off and were lying on the threshold. Only his body remained. That is why to this day neither the priest of Dagon nor any others who entered Dagon's temple at Ashdod step on the threshold. The Lord's hand was heavy upon the people of Ashdod and its vicinity. He brought devastation upon them and afflicted them with tumors. When the men of Ashdod saw what was happening, they said, 'The ark of the God of Israel must not stay here with us because his hand is heavy upon us and upon Dagon our God.' So they called together all the rulers of the Philistines and asked them, 'What shall we do with the ark of the God of Israel?'" Thank you. You may be seated. After the ark was captured by the Philistines, it was taken to the city of Ashdod. Ashdod was one of the primary Philistine cities. There were five kind of regarded as large cities, not large by our standards today, but large by standards of that day. Ashdod is on the coast of the Mediterranean, probably about 50 miles from where it was captured, and it was a great spoil of war for the Philistines. They actually captured the most sacred object of the Israelite people, and it had to be a great source of pride for them. I mean, they captured this thing that the Israelite people bowed down to, and for ever since the days of Moses represented God Himself, the God of Israel, and the Philistines had defeated the God of Israel. And they had taken away this sacred object and taken it back to their temple and taken it in the temple, and they put it down in front of their great God Dagon to say how great their God Dagon was and how great they were. And so they placed it there. And in the morning, when they came to the temple the next day, they found that Dagon had fallen off its pedestal, this great large idol, and fallen down on the floor and laid there in front of the Ark of the Covenant. I imagine they thought, well, this is kind of an unusual thing, and I wonder what happened in the night. Maybe somebody came in and pushed it over. And so they took this great idol of Dagon and they put it back up on its pedestal, and then the next night came and went, and they came in the next day. But the second day when they came in, the idol of Dagon had not only fallen off its pedestal down in front of the Ark of the Covenant, but its arms and its legs had broken off. And so their idol was beginning to crumble. And not only that, but then God sent to them and afflicted them with tumors. And they broke out in tumors. The people of Ashdod began to break out with these things, and they got sicker and sicker, and very quickly some of them began to die. And the text uses the words affliction and devastation. All of a sudden, upon these proud people who had captured the ark of the Lord of Israel, God had began to pour out on them His wrath. And so after a time, the people began to cry out, and they knew that this was not the work of man. They knew that this was the act of God. And so the people of Ashdod say, "Get this thing out of here. Look what's happened to us since it came in." And so they take the Ark of the Covenant and they carry it to the next Philistine town and say, "You guys take this Ark. We don't want it anymore." You look at verse 9. It says, "But after they moved it, the Lord's hand was against that city, throwing it into a great panic. He afflicted the people of the city, both young and old, with an outbreak of tumors. So they sent the Ark of God to Ekron." You notice something about we see emerging out of this story is the response of God. Up till now, God has said to the Israelite people, "Turn back. I warn you to turn back. If you do what's right, I will help you and bless you." And now God's been silent for a while. God's withdrawn His presence from the Israelites. And now the Philistines have begun basically to make fun of the God of Israel. So God begins to speak out. First the idol goes down, then the idol goes down and it's broken, then the people break out with these tumors. What a strange story. God was not happy. A lot of times when we read stories in the Bible, we wonder, well, what did God really think? Does God think like we do? I mean, does he have emotions? Is he deeply offended by things? And we know in the Bible, yes, God is deeply offended. There's some things that deeply offend God. God is deeply offended by pride, one of many things. God was not happy in 1 Samuel chapter 5. You read the Bible, you find times when God delights in things and delights in people, but you also read stories in the Bible that we see a different side of God. And today, I want to emphasize two sides of the response of God in this story. Number one is in this part of the story, you see the anger of God. God is angry about something. He is deeply offended. We might not think of God often in terms of what we see in 1 Samuel chapter 5. You know, first of all, God just kind of comes in the night and That was the first thing. Maybe the people will get it. But no, they didn't. They put it right back up there. So then God comes in the second night. That's how I see this story. They still didn't get it. So what does God do? He says, I'm just going to back up. Let the diseases come on the people. Let them experience what it's like without the hand and the presence of God. There's something about this story that, or there's two things. I'm going to get to the other one in about 10 minutes, Lord willing. But right now, I want you to think about, in this story, the nature of God as being angry. Another word I want to use is the nature of God to be jealous. God was angry here. He was angry at the Israelites. He was angry at the Philistines. You know, God is angry at some things. He is angry when we look Him in the face and say, we're not going to allow you to be God. We're going to keep you in that little box. That makes God angry. That's what the Bible tells us. God was angry. He had been trifled with for a long time. God is patient, but there's a time that God loses His patience. I don't know how else to say that, or He measures His patience or something, but there's a time when God says, that's it. You're going to get what you deserve. You're going to get the consequences of your stubbornness. And the term that I want us to look at is found three times in this chapter. It's basically, His hand was heavy. Look right here on the screen. God's heavy hand. I want to ask you this morning, do you think God notices when you have an attitude? There they go. Do you think God notices when you have an attitude that says, you're not in charge of my life? Do you think God notices when you're stubborn in your spirit toward God? Do you think God notices when you say, I'm going to do what I want to do no matter what God says? I want to tell you something. God notices. God noticed the Israelites. They were the people that belonged to Him. He finally said, okay, you have your way. Verse 11 says, death had come and filled the city with panic. And then it says, God's hand was very heavy. Let me tell you something that I believe about God. God is a very loving God, and I talk a lot more about the love of God than I do the anger of God, but the anger of God is very real. The consequences of disobeying God's law are very painful. God gives us His Spirit to guide us because He cares about us and He loves us and He wants to help us. But the Israelites had really gotten pretty cutesy with God. You know, God, you're okay. Yeah, we believe in God of Israel. Yeah, He was a God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And yeah, we got a Bible that tells all about Him. And yeah, we got some great stories. Let the old people tell you about them. They got pretty cutesy with God. You know, like, oh, He's okay. He's just another buddy out there. God finally said, that's it. See how you do without me. See what happens to your life when you ignore me. See what happens when I say, okay, you have your way. You see, that natural tendency of the sin nature inside will take over and it will bring painful painful consequences. Those of you that have been Christians for a long time, you know from personal experience times in your life when you've trifled with God. And you would say to the young people that are here today, don't take God for granted. Young people, don't take God for granted in your life. You can lose so much in a short amount of time. Do you think God notices? He has a heavy hand. I want you to know that God does have a heavy hand. And He knows what you do in secret. He notices. He knew what the Israelites were doing, and He knew what the Philistines were doing, and He knows what you and I are doing today. The Philistines knew that. And they came to understand, boy, the Philistines knew that they were playing with fire. They could see it pretty quickly. They didn't respect God. They didn't know God. They didn't probably understand the history of God and the Israelite people, but they understood that they were really messing with something that they didn't want to mess with. And so chapter 6, verse 1 says, when the ark of the Lord had been in Philistine territory 7 months, the Philistines called for the priests and the diviners and said, what shall we do with the ark of the Lord? Tell us how we should send it back to its place. You see, they knew that it was time to send the ark back. They weren't going to make fun of the God of Israel anymore. They just wanted to be left alone. So they loaded it up and they sent it back to Israel. It's a whole story about that we're not going to get in today, but how they put this ark on this cart and they sent it back. Go on to that next slide, would you, Nate? And they sent it back, and when it got back, they were greatly relieved. Okay, this thing that belongs to the God of Israel, we don't want anything to do with that. And so it goes back. The Israelites, now, well, what did they do? What happened to the Israelite people? Well, chapter 7, verse 1 tells us the Israelites realized what they had lost. They finally came to the point where they realized what they had lost. They realized how close they had been to disaster, and they did have disaster in the land. Many of their people were killed in the army, and so what did they do? The Israelites in chapter 7, verse 1 says, so the men of Kiriath-Jearim came and took up the ark of the Lord. They took it to Abinadab's house on the hill and consecrated Eleazar, his son, to guard the ark of the Lord. It was a long time, 20 years in all, that the ark remained at Kiriath-Jearim, and all the people of Israel mourned and sought after the Lord. So what did the Israelite people do? The ark's been gone 7 months. They realize what they've lost. They've lost so much. They've lost the presence of the Lord. They've lost that closeness of God. They've lost that sense that God was with them and cared about them and wanted to help them and guide them and meet every need that they had. The Israelites knew what they lost, and it says there that they turned back to the Lord. See, they became hungry again for God. They became hungry in their spirits to connect to the Almighty God. And so they returned to God, the verse says. They put God back in the right place. It's like the Israelite people had God here back in the back, and they said, well, we want to bring Him back out, and we want to open up the box. And God, now, would You please be who You are? And we'll listen again. We're sorry for what we did. God, we want You to be here. Again, this is the place we want You to have in our lives, not in the back, but right in the front of our lives. It says that they put away their idols. Many of them had picked up all kinds of the idols of the Canaanites. And you know, we have idols today. We have things that are more important to us than God. Things that are more important than connecting to God. Sometimes it might be a relationship. It might be something you hold in your hand and you talk into. It could be a habit in your life that you know doesn't honor God, and you hold on to it. Might be, maybe for women, it might be, I know what it is for men, at least I know what it is for a lot of us, you know, and we do love our sports, we love our hunting, we love our time, we love a lot of things. You know, those things can become more important to us than God, and whatever it is that tempts you away from God, the Israelites put their idols away. It says they committed themselves to the Lord. They took a good look at themselves. they looked in the mirror and they realized what they lost. And they said, we don't want to live like this. We don't want to live without God's presence. We don't want to live without the voice of the Lord speaking to us and calling to us. And so they called out before the Lord in chapter 7 and verse 6. Toward the end of the verse, it says this, "On that day they fasted, and there they confessed, 'We have sinned against the Lord.'" Pretty simple. They came before the Lord and they said, "God, we've done wrong. We have not had you in the place that you deserve and belongs to you." And so they fasted and they confessed and they prayed and they asked God to forgive them. They came before the God of Israel, the God who was angry, and they got to the truth of the relationship with God, and they were honest with God. You can't be right with God unless you're honest with Him about your heart. And they turned back to the Lord. They had an attitude of humility and repentance. And the Israelites in this story, in the end of this story in chapter 7, they come back to the Lord. And when they did, it's amazing. Now I want to show you the other side of God. The other side of God's jealousy. I talked about the jealousy of God and His anger, how He withdrew His presence and He punished the people. But I want you to see how God responded. You may wonder, does God hear us when we're really sorry? Does He really know it when we say, "God, we're sorry. I haven't done what I'm supposed to, and I'm sorry." You may wonder, does God hear you when you say that? Well, I want you to listen to God's response in chapter 7, verse 10. This is what happened. It said, "While Samuel was sacrificing the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to engage Israel in battle." Here they come again. "But on that day, the Lord thundered with loud thunder against the Philistines and threw them into such a panic that they were routed before the Israelites." You see, when the people repented and turned to the Lord, what did God do? God didn't sit back on a chair and say, I really don't think you mean it. He didn't sit back there and say, "Boy, you're just going to get what you deserve. You can forget about me helping you." It says, when they repented, God thundered with loud thunder against the Philistines. You saw the response of God and how God rose up in mercy and restoration. I love this picture. We can turn back and He'll receive us with His open arms. The last picture I want to show you this morning is one that I believe I've shown before. And this is the picture of the side of God, of His loving jealousy. You see, this is what God wants to do for us when we turn back to Him. When we say, "You know, we've been out of line, attitude's not been right, we've had a proud spirit." This is what God does when we turn back to Him. He just opens up His arms and says, "Come back." And He receives us. That's a beautiful picture. That's who God is. God reaches out and opens His arms to us in order for us to hear His words of reconciliation and forgiveness and restoration. That's how God feels about you. God has arms that are like this. He's angry when you sin. He's jealous. He's a jealous God. And He's always watching for you to come back so He can reach out His arms and receive you to Him again. Would you stand with me today? I want to ask you to turn in your hymn book, like I did last week, to a real familiar song, number 486, "I Surrender All." Our team sang that chorus a few minutes ago, and we're going to sing that chorus again. But I want to ask you to look at verse 2 this morning in closing. I guess I want to ask you to look at this kind of in relation to, where is God in your life? Is He in a little box, or is He that big? Verse 2 says, "All to Jesus I surrender, humbly at His feet I bow. Worldly pleasures all forsaken, take me, Jesus, take me now." Verse 4, "All to Jesus I surrender, Lord, I give myself to Thee. Fill me with Thy love and power, let Thy blessing follow me." I want to say to you this morning, if God has spoken to your heart about authority, about who's in charge, I just want to invite you to say, "God, this is what I want. this is the kind of relationship I want to have with you. I don't want to be on the side of the Philistines where God just knocks their God off the pedestal. I mean, God can do that. I mean, He can bring disease. He can bring devastation to the army. God can do that, but this is what He wants for you and I. You want to pray this morning? Come to the front or pray right where you're at. This morning I want to invite you to say that prayer of authority to God. God, You're in charge of my life. I want to have that kind of relationship with You. I know that You love me. I know that You're a jealous God. And invite You today. We're just going to sing the chorus through two times and invite you to pray.